That's what happened.
All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, March 6th. It is. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to get you started and keep winning on FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. As always, DFSR.com/NBA gets you that free 3-day trial of the projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Go check that out. Free for optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month, and you're all good to go. It covers all the sports and providers that we put out during the course of the year, so we don't section it off by, you know, who wrote the picks or, you know, what site you're playing. We have it on the site. We cover it for you, so free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month, dfsr.com/NBA. Buddy, big, you're working no heat over at that house, right? We're live.
I got a lot of news, actually. I got a lot of news to catch people up on. No heat in the house, 4 days, New Hampshire winters, no problem. That's okay. For starters. Second of all, those of you who chimed in and saw the first Twitch live stream, appreciate it. Good news for you, Doug. I know you can't hear me. I'm rocking the hat again. The hat was a big favorite. It was a crowd favorite, both internally in the office and in the chat. The hat is back, and the hat's here to stay, baby. So
the hat was a big disappointment when I actually saw the video feed afterwards, and I thought, what?
Can we talk about it? I honestly just took it personally the first time. I didn't really want to talk about it that much. My darling wife made me this hat. What do we not like about the hat? I like the hat.
I thought you looked like you were a doula going to a birth. It looked ridiculous. Anyway, if you're listening to the podcast, you can't see it. So
what if it's a bizarre reference for a sports podcast? How about like a guy going to read at a coffee house or something?
Yeah, that makes more sense. I'm just more, my world's firmly planted in like the birth world. All right. Big Tuesday.
Dude, that sounded really badass when you said it. It's like crazy because it's one of those things you don't realize how badass it's going to sound until you actually hear someone drop it. So yeah, dude, you're crazy immersed in the birth world.
Uncharacteristically, pretty big slate here for Tuesday eight games. And I've got to be honest with you, this slate, I was writing us up picks last night for Sports Illustrated, and I was struggling. I joked about it with you off the air, but I was struggling to write up a genuine set of picks in that, like, don't just write up all the most expensive guys because those are the guys that are projected for the most points. You know, usually when we do that kind of thing, when we write up a picks article, we don't just make everyone, not everyone is an elite play, right? Like, it's got to be the picks need to sort of break down into some sort of category where maybe you can't make one exact lineup for them all, but you can come close, right? You can come, like, we have a couple of high tier guys and mid tier and low tier because that's an honest way of writing these things.
I think that's how you make a lineup, right? Like, you can't just make a lineup by playing all the most expensive players.
And so I was struggling last night because you can write up pretty much all the expensive guys, or you can make a case. I should say, right? You can make a case for all the expensive guys pretty easily. But then it's the cheaper guys that I think we might be in a weird problem, short of some sort of injury news that comes out during the day. So it's early. It's 9:30 Eastern time. This new news, especially with this many games, tends to trickle in. Though one of the issues that you do look at is that there isn't that much injury news even hanging out there. So sometimes we'll be saying, ooh, you know, this so-and-so is questionable. Yeah. If we get this news, then we can kind of things will cascade one way. But that doesn't even seem to be the case today. Again, things happen. So hopefully I'm sitting here kind of just quietly hoping and waiting that someone is out today, that we get some kind of cheaper value, because I think otherwise we're going to be stuck with some very weird decisions. We'll go game by game here and kind of take a look at who some of those considerations are and you know, where we can kind of go. It doesn't start off easily though, because Miami plays Washington. Mm-hmm. Washington -5 favorite here. Miami, this is a team. I mean, they are firmly in the camp of who the hell knows on any given night what the plan is. So last night, Luke Babbitt comes out of nowhere and starts and plays 25 minutes. The guy legit, like, not even barely even played.
We started the other night too, and he didn't play much. But yeah, he's a
well. That's what I mean. He didn't.
They don't care about Luke Babbitt. They run him out there to start. And it's strange too, because it's not even like, you know, sometimes they start like a tall guy to play center for the jump ball or something. Not so with the Heat. They just put a guy out there 14 minutes, 22 minutes, doesn't matter.
So they start Babbitt, and then the rest of the guys are kind of the same with Whiteside, Richardson, Dragic, and then Tyler Johnson came back. They ended up in a blowout, so it's a little hard to tell what the plan was there. Right. They ran Justice Winslow a lot off the bench. He's actually been pretty good. He has actually a guy that I wrote up as a possible cheap play, just as has like a higher floor just because he does a lot of stuff. But other than that, like, I don't know what, if anything, you can trust on this Heat team on a night-to-night basis. And honestly, sometimes teams like that, they're like, oh, you know, this is the night you get crazy. Maybe you can take a GBP flyer. I don't even see it there with them either because they just don't really run enough minutes. And then on the Washington side of the ball, it does look like Oubre is going to be back, and we have some fair pricing here. What are your overall thoughts here? I'm kind of already throwing my hands up just to start this thing, and I hate when I do that, but maybe you see something different.
No, I think it's a reasonable approach with the Heat. I mean, in looking at the slate, I guess this was on the third when I was looking at this slate, when a lot of the Heat guys were chalk, especially on FanDuel, smaller slate, it seemed like there was some value. You know, Olynyk was out, Abadiah was out, Tyler Johnson was out. And so people loaded up on the Heat. I mean, Goran Dragic was chalk, James Johnson was chalk, Josh Richardson was reasonably highly owned. And what we saw is that almost none of them got there, even when there was increased opportunity. So the question I asked myself in that case is, well, when there were collectively 80 minutes sitting on the bench with injuries and no one got the value, what am I hoping to accomplish now that everyone's back? Nothing is the answer. I'm not playing any of these guys. I think they're all, to a man, almost overpriced, even the cheaper guys on the bench. And yeah, like, you'd like to talk yourself into the big upside of, you know, like you could sell a narrative like, well, one of Johnson or Olynyk might just wind up playing a bunch of minutes and kind of get there. And that happens like very occasionally over the course of the Heat season, but by and large, it just doesn't really happen. So yeah, it's not outside the realm of possibility. It is a reasonable GPP flyer, but I don't really see the point in taking that particular risk when others will, I'm sure, avail themselves to you as well. And then other guys like Josh Richardson, who had been pretty solid, plays 18 minutes against Phoenix. I'm not touching this team.
Yeah, and it says a lot about sort of where their opportunity is and their pricing too, when even last night, a lot of our top lineups didn't even have Heat in them, and that never happens when a team plays the Suns. You always get somebody in there. Usually it's two people just because of the way the Suns are just the perfect matchup for DFS purposes. Wasn't the case last night. Like I said, I could possibly talk myself into Winslow, especially if he were for some reason move back into the starting lineup, but we'll have to wait and see on that. We will have news. And then Washington, the Heat matchup is bad. They're very slow. They're good on defense. They play matchups very well, as we see with these rotations, for the same reason we're complaining about their just like their minutes projections. Spoelstra does play plays very, very loose rotations in that he always just kind of finds whatever matchup he thinks is working, and that tends to work from them. Atlanta goes in and plays Toronto. Toronto 12.5-point favorite. Atlanta sat Bazemore last game, but it looks like he's going to be back tonight. They're another team that doesn't really play anyone more than 30 minutes. Toronto's kind of in the same way. I mean, you can see where we're going with the slate already because we're two games in, and we're between these four teams. You either have bad rotational, three of the four, you have bad rotational problems, and probably fair pricing on every single one of them. And this game adds the additional blowout risk. I have someone just posted in our chat that this might be a night to play. I'll give him a shout out because I'll look who it was. Sean. Yeah, Sean. So he posted that, you know, this might be the night to play Toronto, the Toronto second unit, especially if it turns into a blowout, and a unit that they already do play a lot of minutes. Because you see yourself getting behind a play like that, like maybe playing a Van Vliet or a Siakam or a Poeltl or something like that, maybe on a little bit cheaper, thinking that they're going to get the blowout minutes.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable, I suppose. The thing about Atlanta is they really are a good matchup. I mean, it's a team that plays a top seven pace with a bottom 10 defensive efficiency. In general, you can target Atlanta. The problem with Toronto is, of course, like not only do most of their players play inconsistent minutes, the blowout risk means that even the guys that play consistent minutes in close games like Lowry and DeRozan, even those guys don't really play consistent minutes when it comes out in the wash. And so, you know, it's been a little while since Toronto's been involved in a blowout, but there was that long stretch in February where, you know, DeRozan and Lowry were playing fewer than 30 minutes per game. I think for cash game purposes, you're accepting some risk in your life by playing them. And on the same token, given the kind of lack of mid-range value tonight, I still could see, you know, like if the system spat out Kyle Lowry tonight against Atlanta, I wouldn't X them out. I think it's still, even with the blowout risk being present, I think it's still like something of an okay gamble just based on how good the matchup is.
Yeah. And these guys, even like, you know, Van Vliet, 4,200 on DraftKings. If you think he's going to play 25 minutes off the bench tonight, he doesn't. It's not even like if you look through their blowout log, he's not necessarily a consistent getting blowout minutes kind of guy. They just, they kind of play what they have at the moment. And that makes things very, very difficult to predict. And like I said, I can't really go anywhere down the Atlanta Hawks side because they just, I mean, outside of like Torian Prince, who sometimes plays 30 minutes, the rest of the guys, Collins, Deadman, even when they start, they're kind of firmly in the 28 minute camp, and their prices have all shot up. Collins, especially, his price has shot up into the mid 6,000, somewhere like that on FanDuel. And that's just really not tenable if you don't think for his.
Certainly not against Toronto. I mean, on the wrong side of a blowout and up against a team that plays a slow pace and about a top three defensive efficiency, you're not playing any Atlanta guys tonight.
For sure. One game I think we can probably target a little bit here is Philly and Charlotte. So Philly, only a 1.5 point favorite against Charlotte. Charlotte is in a weird spot. They are in basically the NBA equivalent of no man's land. They are not good enough to make the playoffs, have not tried or are not bad enough to get a higher chance at a lottery pick. And they're sort of just stuck like seven games out of the playoffs. Not going to get anyone to pick, not going to get any high price talent or pedigree talent out of the draft. But that one thing that does, it does keep them in games and sort of like DFS relevant only because they seem like they're still trying to win. Now, Philly is a slight favorite. Philly is still trying to win here. They are playing high leverage games. I wrote up Reddick and Covington as possible cheap plays if nothing else materializes here. But what are your thoughts here overall on Philly? Do you like this game staying close? Do you think we can take a look at Embiid? I mean, I wrote up Walker too. I feel like there is maybe something that we can dive into here.
Yeah, I mean, so I think Reddick is somewhat tempting just as a way to escape kind of a bad position somewhat cheaply. He is coming through in optimal lineups right now. You kind of know what you're getting with Reddick, which is sort of an exciting 4.5 to 5 points, 5x points per dollar, but that's not terrible. Like, you'll take that out of a shooting guard spot. The minutes should be relatively secure in close games for them, and with Philly favored by just 1.5 points, it seems to, you know, kind of rate out that way. It's also interesting to note, basically, and it's very strange, actually, because essentially since Nick Batum's arrival in Charlotte, they have turned into just one of the very most generous teams in terms of allowing fantasy points to opposing shooting guards. And, you know, Batum had a reputation as a good defender when he arrived, and it sort of hasn't panned out completely. And since, you know, like sometimes they might put MKG or, you know, perhaps even a more active defender on a really good shooting guard, I don't think that will quite happen in Reddick's case. So I think he kind of potentially has the opportunity to slip through the cracks and maybe provide some value there. And at the very least, I think his floor is reasonably high. You know, again, he is involved in sort of the number of possessions he's going to be involved in. Covington, I think, is sort of a different case here. He's sort of, I don't know, he's almost like an upside play to me in that his minutes come and go a little bit more readily than Reddick's do. But the upside, I think, is considerably higher. You know, he can really pile on defensive stats when things break right. We saw a 10 rebound game from him up against Cleveland. And, you know, occasionally he can do it scoring wise, although that's happened a lot less now that Simmons and Embiid are kind of firing on all cylinders there. So I think Covington's a guy I could consider here. Hopefully more for big tournaments.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I landed. I mean, I did, like I said, I wrote up Covington, and I said, Covington, you're kind of banking on the threes and the steals at times, and that's going to be a really pretty high variance way to play. And then Walker, I mean, right now, if you run lineups on our site, Walker, at least on FanDuel, is coming in at about 75% of them, at least on the FanDuel lineups. And then I think it's a little bit less. He's not coming up as much on DraftKings. It seems like a little bit better deal on FanDuel. So I think this is a game we end up targeting. I really hope that there's more cheap value that comes in, because I don't want to roll out guys like Reddick and Covington. I don't think, I mean, even MKG is a guy that's coming in like as a, this really is more about the slate than the projection, because we have MKG for like 24 minutes or something like that, and he ends up becoming one of the better points per dollar small forwards on FanDuel, and that's mostly just because he's 3,600 and cheaper than everybody else. So it's not, I mean, people see that name, they're like, oh, you know, what do you love about MKG? Nothing really, except that there's just no one that just roll down the list and who do you like better? You know, like there's maybe PJ Tucker, we can talk about him in a little bit, possibly. But other than that, it's not so much you like MKG. It's just that there's just this list of guys that's in the small forward pool is completely gross.
Really the issue, and I think as we break it down too, you mentioned this on the top of the podcast, that basically you can pick between almost all of the expensive guys tonight. And when that's kind of comes to fruition, basically it means it almost doesn't matter which of those that you do choose. What really matters is which positions you elect to pay up at, right? And so, yeah, you're going to pay up at some position tonight, and you're necessarily going to pay down at some other position. That's just kind of how DFS works. I guess the question we'll have to ask ourselves going into lineup block tonight is, like, is this a position where we want to dip down and roll like an MKG type, or do we just want to pay up for someone like, say, Paul George, you know, who perhaps a little bit unexciting on the $8,600 price tag, but does have a track record of paying nearly 5X in, at least in his recent history, and on the season, 39 fantasy points per game on $8,600 on FanDuel. Not unreasonable. You know, you could also go the risky route for big tournaments and pay up for like Kevin Durant or something. But yeah, for cash game purposes, it's going to be, you're going to be kissing somebody's sister, because you got Otto Porter against Miami. Like, the list of safe plays, we already talked about Josh Richardson. And after that, it just nosedives. Like, Robert Covington is basically the safest guy after that. And that hopefully tells you all you need to know about the level of safety that exists at the small forward position tonight.
And I don't even know what could, honestly, even just looking at the small forward position, I'm not sure what could happen short of something happening in another position. Like, Doug McDermott gets a start. I don't really know what, and that's not going to happen. So, like, short of something, well, actually, I take that back. It could. But short of something crazy like that happening, I'm just not sure what stands to change, especially at this position. And I think it just could be a problem with the slate in general. 8 o'clock game. This is the marquee matchup of the night. Houston goes in and plays OKC. There's a crazy, the Western Conference right now, every game, if you're in the Western Conference playoffs race right now, every game matters. There's a, I think I counted it this morning. I'm just going to try to bring it up while I'm talking here. But if you looked at, if you look at the playoff seeding for the Western Conference, I believe there are seven teams that are all within two in the loss column of each other, with two of those teams not going to make the playoffs. So
yeah, it's crazy.
You have, yeah, right. So you have the Blazers, Pelicans, Spurs, Timberwolves, Thunder, Nuggets, Clippers, and Jazz. And if you go all the way down to the Jazz, that's four games. But if you put a dish to the Clippers, all those teams are separated by only two losses in the loss column. That means every game down the stretch is going to matter, because one of these very good teams is just going to miss the playoffs. And it, right now, Portland's in third. And they could miss, right? Like, they could, because they're only two games up on the Clippers. I'm saying this to just kind of point to, for these teams, none of these teams are going to take a game off the rest of the season, I don't think. They are just not in a position where they can lose. And Thunder are on an especially precarious situation here, because they're down near the bottom. And I believe they do not own some of the tiebreakers against the teams above them. So they just need to win. So anyway, long story short, this is the game that we're going to want to tune into tonight. 222 over under. Houston, 4.5-point favorite. Houston has looked every bit as like the best team of basketball, especially, I mean, just really basically the whole season. They're all kind of fairly priced, though. I mean, we have Harden, OKC, still a decent defensive team, worse without Roberson for sure. But, you know, Harden, expensive, feels like he could play a lot of minutes. They are starting PJ Tucker. They're going to be without, who's going to sit today? I forget. There's three guys that are out today. Oh, Joe Johnson, Ryan Anderson, and Brandon Wright. Doesn't really matter. What are your thoughts on targeting this game? It's a really high over-under. It seems like it's going to be a close one. It feels like there's a lot of fantasy relevant guys here. I'm wondering if they're all maybe a little too expensive. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of the things you said there. So for starters, you know, trying to break down the matchups going both ways. Oklahoma City's been a below average matchup for most of the season this year, and that's been largely a result of their pace and defensive efficiency. So, you know, no big surprises there, but playing a top 10 defensive efficiency with a bottom 10 pace means that you're generally not getting additional value based on the matchup, right? And so you take a team like Houston, whose players have been playing relative, especially now that they're basically healthy, you know, minus Ryan Anderson's and Brandon Wright's of the world. Now that they're relatively healthy, these guys are playing their minutes. And so what does that mean? It means Chris Paul's over 8,000. It means Harden is up over 11,000. And then you can go up and down the list, and you're not going to see a lot of value in an absolute sense. Now you have players like Capella, who are maybe slightly underpriced relative to where they are when they're really firing on all cylinders. And sometimes with these big money teams, like say Golden State, blowouts become so pervasive that the prices remain depressed. And then simply the sheer fact of a close game can kind of make them playable. I'm not sure the Rockets are exactly in that class for me right now. I would just assume, you know, just seeing some of the other options we have at various positions across the league, I don't know that I would go out of my way to target them here, even though I basically think the bad matchup of OKC kind of washes out the opportunity that you get from probably getting the starters minutes here.
I think that the one guy I kind of glossed over him, and you mentioned him, is Capella is still coming very cheap. If you think he's only 6,800 on DraftKings, he's coming in 100% of the lineups. He's basically going to be, I would say, a cash game lock there. He's coming in 100% of our lineups at two at center on FanDuel as well at 7,500. It's sort of the nature of the slate because there's no cheaper guy. Because as of right now, there's the non-existence of cheaper guys. It is, we are middling out a little bit, and Capella fits that mold. He's been very, very good this season. This is the kind of game that he would play mid-30s minutes. He's played 33 minutes in each of the last two games. Base right around a little less than 5X against Boston, and then really beat this price out against the Clippers. So he can do it. He was good against OKC earlier in the season as well. So I think he's a guy that I'd be fine going sort of the mid-tier route on, and really especially on DraftKings at only 6,800 with the double-double firmly in play. OKC, you mentioned Paul George a little bit in passing when we're talking about small forwards. Says a lot. I don't know who it says more about this at this point, Davis or Westbrook, but we have Westbrook and Davis projected for the same amount of minutes, and we have Davis projected for nearly 6 points more than Westbrook. Now he's 1,000 more. But do you think you see people play Westbrook in this matchup just because it's Westbrook and it's a high-profile game, or do you think that this is a place where we can feel pretty confident in fading him?
Yeah, it doesn't seem unreasonable. I mean, he had very high ownership, I mean, understandably, against Phoenix. Also had very high ownership against Portland. I think when people see Westbrook and they see a matchup where he's pretty likely to play, I think they feel pretty confident rolling him out there. And listen, Chris Paul, you know, he has a very strong defensive reputation. I think a lot of that is based on like grit and hustle and all that sort of stuff. That doesn't matter as much when you're just up against an athletic specimen like Westbrook. So For me, I would be comfortable playing Westbrook tonight. He's in that class of big money guys that I would be fine playing. It's just a simple fact of, is that really where the value shows up? And I'm not sure that's where the value is going to come in. So I think for that reason, I might wind up not playing him. I mean, if you look at defense versus position stats, which are, you know, a little bit murky for the Rockets because Paul has missed a decent amount of time this season, but they're very strong against the point guards overall, you know, bottom five team for opposing point guards to face. So I think that confluence of factors probably leaves Westbrook out of our optimal lineups, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him have significant ownership tonight.
Yeah, and I think it's all, like you said before, it's just going to come down to what positions you can grab value at. And there do seem to be a couple point guards we can maybe just slot in there. Denver goes in and plays Dallas. Denver minus 5-point favorite. They're another team in that Western Conference race that just basically needs to win out or win as many games as possible over this home stretch of the season. Dallas is a team. They sat Wesley Matthews the other day, and they are still running some weird rotations. The starters aren't getting tons and tons of minutes. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. does play a little bit more than the others. Yogi Ferrell drew the start the other night, was completely awful. It's really hard for a shoot. Man, it is hard for a shooting guard to get three fouls in like 7 minutes or something like that, just because it's mostly about the nature of the position. Like you don't on ball defend enough to get that many fouls, but Yogi Ferrell was able to pull it off. I think Matthew's gonna be back tonight, so it kind of doesn't matter. I did write up Dwight Powell as a guy. Now the minutes, he was a little bit of foul trouble last game. But the three games before that had been very good. Still appears to be in the starting role. I don't know if they'll change that with the Jokic matchup tonight. I don't think Dallas cares so much about matchups at this point, just because they have said that they're in the tanking position. So Powell's a guy I wrote up, still kind of getting a little bit expensive. And then you got Denver going the other way against Dallas. It's a pretty slow team. What are your thoughts here on either maybe possibly some value on getting on this Dallas guys, just because Denver's not very good on defense? Do you think this is a game we could end up targeting?
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking at Dallas side actually probably a little bit more than you. I think Harrison Barnes is playable here. Just looking, you know, he's a guy that's had pretty consistent opportunity all season long, paying roughly 5X points per dollar in this price all season long. I've been doing so recently as well. Yeah, the minutes are down off their early season peaks, but we still see him touching up against, you know, 38 minutes from time to time, 34 against Chicago. The problem for Dallas has been that they were involved in so many weird games for such a long stretch that it's kind of hard to get a handle on what the true minutes are for any given game. You know, like when we're making the projections for minutes on any given slate, basically what we're trying to figure out is what's the coach's plan in a regular game and how likely is this to be a regular game, you know? And by a regular game, I mean not one where the starters randomly get pulled in the third quarter or, you know, whatever happens, you know? So I think this game, 5-point spread, doesn't scare me off this being a quote unquote regular game. I think that's what I've tried to be project. My suspicion is Dallas wants to play Barnes something like 34 minutes in the average game. I see our system says 32. That seems reasonable to me as well. I think nonetheless, he's still playable here. I'm perhaps a little bit less excited about Powell than you are. Powell now has back-to-back games where he played 25 and 23 minutes. He had those two games where he played 37 and 32, but outside of that, like, I'm not sure what the real plan is with Powell. I think he's a guy that's, you know, Dallas has always flirted with having him in the starting lineup or sort of being a starter in name only. I think they get frustrated with sometimes his lack of offensive production. He does bring a rebounding in a defensive sense that I think they really like in certain matchups. I'm just not sure Denver really brings that kind of level of big man that they want to leave him out there for, you know. I mean, Millsap's fine and all, but I don't see any reason why he just wouldn't split time with Dirk like he has the last couple of games. So I'm not a huge Powell fan. I do like Dennis Smith Jr., though, too. He's a guy I wrote up going into Sunday's games. He was excellent, of course, against New Orleans, scoring 40 fantasy points, 23, 5, and 8 line. I think he sort of is the future. He's the exciting player on the team. And again, in normal games, I would expect him to play, you know, low to mid-30s minutes, which still seems like a value to me.
Yeah, they're all just it's just hard to trust it. Smith, like I said at the beginning, is the most trustworthy of all the Dallas guys in terms of minutes. So that's if you're going to go one place in that mid-tier on Dallas, I think he is the way to go. The Powell thing was sort of the same thing I mentioned with MKG. It's like, I don't really like Dwight Powell. I just don't like any of these other guys either. Like, if you look down the points per dollar list for power forward, it reads a lot like the small forward outside of Anthony Davis, who we'll get to in a couple minutes. But if you look at this list, it's like Marvin Williams. Okay, that guy plays 23, 24 minutes a game. Dwight Powell, like you said, there's minutes problems there. Markieff Morris has had minutes issues all season long and is a terrible matchup. Ibaka has minutes issues and is a blowout risk. You mentioned James Johnson. And now the list only gets worse from there. And that list is already bad, right? So it's like, where do you land on having the roster two power forwards? I think on DraftKings, you're going to get away with it because there's so many small forward, power forward combo guys that you're not really so worried. This is why I kind of focus a little bit more on FanDuel for roster construction purposes, because this is a particular problem being locked into these two at every position, well, besides center, but two at every position, is that when you just can't, there's such little flexibility that you just end up having to just talk about these guys and having to make a decision about one of those guys that I just mentioned, and it all just kind of feels bad. So I don't love Powell. I guess looking at him compared to the other guys, and it's all still close, and I could have made a case for really any of them. New York goes in and plays the Blazers. Blazers 9.5-point favorites. They are on the back-to-back here, beat the Lakers last night. Mo Harkless didn't play. Evan Turner started again, didn't play really at all. And so I think they started Zach Collins as well, but it kind of just didn't matter for their minutes. They played Napier a lot off the bench. Portland is sort of creeping up to that blowout zone here, but they are on the back-to-back, so I guess you can take that for what it's worth. And then we have New York, and New York, I mean, they're unapologetically just doing some crazy stuff with their minutes. Like Courtney Lee, 14 minutes a game as a starter. Kanter barely plays. Beasley's playing 20 minutes a game. These two teams are fit the theme of the night of, if you can figure out their minutes, you're probably going to win a lot. And it's just figuring out their minutes. It seems almost an impossible task.
Yeah, it's wild too. You know, I actually tried to figure this out going into New York's last game. And Kanter is an interesting one for me because his points per, I'm not sure if you noticed because he's been, you know, on this crazy team playing wild minutes, but his fantasy points per minute right now are just completely bananas. Like, he played 22 minutes against Sacramento, had 14 points and 16 boards in that time. Like, again, 22 minutes on the court. New York, obviously, just openly tanking, not worrying about putting him out on the court. But I think he's still a big tournament upside play for me simply because if he plays 30 minutes, like, you know, 1.5 fantasy points per minute is not outside the realm of possibility for him right now. And in fact, it seems to be sort of the norm. So if he plays 30 minutes, or, you know, heaven forbid, he goes out there and plays like 33 minutes, like he did a couple times in February, you could see 50 plus fantasy points out of this guy without any real big to do. So a guy to keep on your radar for big tournaments. Not a cash game play, unfortunately, though. I think if he's going to play 22 minutes, that's probably just taking on undue risk for your formats where you're valuing safety. And yeah, the rest of these guys, they'll just come and go based on almost nothing at all. Like, you know, being down by 4 points in the first quarter, pull them all. The one guy that seems somewhat safe, at least from a minutes perspective, is Tim Hardaway Jr. I guess I'm curious to know your thoughts on him. We've run him out there at this price point. several times this season, played 34 minutes against LA, 37 against Sacramento, paid roughly 5X in the last game. Is he a playable guy for cash given how shallow the shooting guard position is tonight?
Yeah, the matchup is just not good enough. If the matchup was like a little bit better, I would say maybe, and it's just not good enough. And he's so, I mean, talk about volatility. Like, this is a guy we talked about having, he's just as volatile as anyone else in the game. Now, he's been a little bit better of late, and that's mostly, I mean, it's mostly thanks to the minutes have been stabilized, and he even still is at the whims of just bad shooting games. Because if he, because this guy can run so bad from the field.
One for 14, no problem.
That's what I mean. And so I just don't, I don't see it. I'd much rather play like, if we're looking at shooting guard, I'd much rather play like Redick at 4,900 and and take a little bit, know that I'm not going to get the ceiling. Basically, I mean, this is where Hardaway is just a GPP play. I actually, Cantor, I agree with you on Cantor. He was a guy, when I wrote up two centers last night, I wrote up Capella and I also wrote up Cantor basically with the same exact verbiage that you used, is that the guy's fantasy points per minute is just completely crazy. And they just, they're like, whoa, slow down, pal. We're trying to lose these games. So that's when, but it's not like, Enes Kanter's never going to really help a team win a lot of games anyway. But if you get him for 30 minutes, good. And then, like I said, Portland, outside of McCollum and Lillard, you're kind of just guessing on the role players. And McCollum and Lillard are very fairly priced, even in a good matchup. New York is a very bad defensive team. Trey Burke creeped back into playing 25 minutes the other day after we talked about him as I talked about him as just not a guy I wanted to play at all. He creeped back in. He's back up to 5,500. I don't see why you would do it. We got two more games left here. 10:30 games. Brooklyn goes in and plays Golden State. Golden State minus 15-point favorites. So firmly preparing for a possible blowout here. Brooklyn is getting healthier. Caris LeVert has played pretty well in the short term. Ronnie Hollis Jefferson is coming off the bench but played a lot of minutes. Blowouts, it's weird with Brooklyn and blowouts. They get blown out. Their minutes kind of all just stay the same no matter what the game script ends up being. And then Golden State, I put them in the low 30s for their starters minutes just because that's sort of where we land when the spread's this high. Does this game strike you as just tournament only, or do you think that Brooklyn gets into like enough of a fast-paced matchup here that we can maybe consider that they just, their starters just see some of the minutes and they like D'Angelo Russell just maybe plays 28 minutes and that's good enough for him in this matchup?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about Russell because, while a lot of these guys have been playing their minutes very reliably, Russell's minutes still have a lot of variation around them. Played 20 minutes against LA, 38 the prior game against Sacktown, 32 against Cleveland, 29 against Chicago. Like, I think the plan is ultimately to play him something like 32 minutes a game. I guess I just don't see him. I don't see those minutes coming as reliably as they do for a guy like Dinwiddie, let's say. But I actually think this game, it's way more about a strategic approach to approaching games like this than it is breaking down this game in particular. Because I actually think if you can kind of forecast the various scenarios that could come about, figuring out which plays to play is relatively straightforward. I mean, we know Brooklyn, just ever since we basically started this business, has been a team that plays fast and plays poorly on defense. Now, they aren't playing quite as fast or as poorly as maybe they have in the past, but they're still a very much one of the most elite matchups you can have for an opposing defensive or a daily fantasy sports player. Now, that being said, we also see that there's a 15-point spread on this game. So the ways you can approach this game are as follows. You can say, I'm not going to play this game in cash because the blowout risk is too great. I think that's totally reasonable. You can also say, well, hey, as I look at these teams, sure, the blowout risk is there, but I think that for whatever reason, insert player here, Draymond Green, has just an outsizedly great matchup that if Golden State blows them out, I'm going to play him. I wouldn't use that approach for this particular game, just because Golden State is not one of those teams that really stresses one particular star having the ball in their hands all the time. I actually think that's what makes them so problematic for DFS purposes and why oftentimes, even when there are Golden State guys that are somewhat chalkish, we don't wind up playing them. I'm picturing more like, Harden on the Rockets when Chris Paul is out, still reasonably to play in a big spread game. So I'm going to kind of take that one off the table. And then the last one is, well, what if the game stays close? Well, if the game stays close, it's going to be for a couple of reasons. Either some of the Golden State guys don't perform very well, or some of the Nets guys go off. Now, if the Golden State guys don't play very well, we want to be off it. But if the Nets guys go off, then we want to look at this for big tournaments. But we want to look at it both ways. I think if you're going to play a big tournament, don't just stack one side of this game. Don't stack, just the Golden State guys. Take the Golden State guys, but then also take Russell and Dinwiddie or whatever, right? But try to picture some scenario where your lineup will look cohesive at the end of the night, because the fact of the matter is, if the game stays close, and you only have the Golden State side, sure, you can cash a big tournament, but the guys that stack both sides are the ones that are going to win it. So, yeah, it's just more of a strategic zoom in rather than highlighting, yeah, play Caris LeVert tonight because X and Y.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the guys like, and then think to yourself, you know, who stands to be on the court the most in a game where they actually keep it close? Like, I think you would see Hollis Jefferson having to score. I think you probably have to see LeVert coming in, you know, off the bench and scoring. I think these guys, you know, these guys are long in their wings, and that those are at times guys that can match up okay with Golden State. They're not, I'm not making the case that they're going to stay in the game, but they have upside. Carroll's another guy like that. He's very versatile in the sense that he can play the three and the four. Yep. I think if there's a scenario where they stay close, those are the guys that you end up seeing, and I guess maybe you get a big scoring game out of Russell as well. So yeah, I think I'm with you there. I don't want to do it by any means in any type of cash situation, just because there is too much risk and their rotations are too weird. But yeah, I think there's definitely a scenario where you know tick everyone up here 10% off their projection or 15% off their projection and say this is the game that I want to like have a little outsized ownership for, and I think you'll actually get it. You'll get big separation because I don't think that's the game that really anyone's going to stack, because they're going to stack this next game. The New Orleans Clippers game is clearly really probably no matter which way you model DFS projections or NBA projections, the Pelicans and the Clippers game is going to be a game that people have a lot of exposure to. It starts with Anthony Davis. Davis's recent run has been basically, I mean, nothing short of historic. He's been unbelievable. I think they've won 7 games in a row. He's averaging something like a 32-14 over the last.
We're just going historic on this one. That's it.
I mean, his numbers are crazy. His recent term numbers. I very few players have like have maintained these kind of numbers like for this kind of stretch. Really just kind of unbelievable what he's doing. And he gets a good matchup here. The Clippers are not very good on defense. The game is supposed to stay close. Both these teams need to win. This game checks every single box for where you want to roster guys in DFS, and I think that we really are only left with the question of who they're going to be. And I think Davis is likely, would you say of all the high priced guys, would you say Davis is the highest owned of all? Let's start there. Is he the highest owned big money play of the night?
Yeah, he could be. And I'm not sure I love it, to be honest. Like, I get that there's a high total here, and I know Davis is on quite a run recently, but we've seen so many players, not so many. The players that we've seen crest up towards this price point have always struggled to stay there. And the reason for that is it's just awfully damn hard to score 60 fantasy points per night. We've seen it for Anthony Davis. He's only scored 53 fantasy points a game over the course of the season. And of course, over the last 2 games, he's down to 53 fantasy points a game in those last 2 games. Now, that being said, obviously you have some contextual factors to consider with Davis. You know, getting reacquainted to playing without Boogie probably matters. The team generally doing well probably increases his overall energy level. One of the biggest rises we've seen from him has been on the defensive end. And as we all know, defensive stats oftentimes are those hustle stats that come from how engaged you are and how well you're working. So given that the Pelicans are working really hard right now, I think it's easy to give him a little bit more benefit of the doubt. The big question is, can you give him the 10 fantasy points per game benefit of the doubt necessary based on a matchup and this recent run? And I think that is a hard question people need to ask themselves. And you know, are we also just going to simply forget that Davis is a guy among all the superstars in the league, by far most likely, just to randomly miss a quarter or more based on, you know, a hangnail or whatever. So I get that it's a good run with Davis recently. I suspect you'll see pretty high ownership with him. And it's crazy because I feel like I'm the only person who likes Davis when he's 11,000. And maybe I'm the only person who doesn't like him at 12,500. But I'm less high on him, I think, than some of the other big money plays in it.
I think mostly it comes down to, at least on FanDuel. So if you look at the way our lineups are constructed right now, he's in 100% of FanDuel lineups. And I think that one of the major reasons for that is because of lack of positional value elsewhere, right? Like we went through the problems with power forward. And I think when that happens, where you look at, where you see other possible value guys, you do see a few more of them in the point guard and shooting guard positions. And this is the case against like Westbrook and Harden, right? Is that you have guys like Lou Williams, who we'll talk about in a minute, and, you know, Kemba Walker, maybe in the mid tier that you can kind of play. There's nobody like that at power forward on FanDuel. And you see the difference where if you go over to DraftKings, so whereas Davis is in 100% of lineups for us right now on FanDuel, he's only in something like 50% of the DraftKings lineups, which means obviously the decision is closer there, right? It's like, it's not. And he's by the way, he's cheaper. Like he's more in range of price of with Westbrook and Harden. He's only 100 more than Harden on DraftKings and only 400 more than Westbrook. And so And yet he's not in 100% of the play. And I think basically the story tonight is all about positions. And with DraftKings, because you have less of a problem with it, maybe there's just a little bit less of a risk. The defensive stats matter a little bit less on DraftKings as well. So it kind of, his projection does come a little bit closer. So I think I can see a situation where I'm like fine doing it on FanDuel because there's nobody else. And maybe I, this is not completely the right word, but hedge a little bit on DraftKings to say that I'm not going to have complete exposure to him there. I think the lineups are going to look very weird if you try to not roster him on FanDuel.
Well, so let me back up for a second, because it's not a question of going out of your way to not roster him by any stretch. He's sure. Totally playable. It's totally fine. If that's how it works out positionally, I don't want to make it seem like I'm like, don't play Anthony Davis tonight. I guess all I'm saying is it happens every single time that people get overly excited about recent runs. And I think that's what's happening here with Davis as well. So should we never stretch out our necks when a guy is overpriced? No, we know that, you know, the Clippers represent a very good matchup. Although again, the DVP data is going to be a little bit off there because their current roster construction, we just simply have too small sample size on. It's more that people are going to look at him like an auto include, got to play him, can't possibly play without him. And I guess for my purposes, if it shook out that the positional matchups worked out where I was playing like Westbrook instead of him, or, you know, Harden, or just one of these other guys instead, I wouldn't be like, oh God, I'm not going to have Davis. I'm on the wrong side of the chalk. I'm going to get crushed tonight.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm with you that he's not like an autoplay, and I get, and he's definitely a tournament fade for sure. I mean, this is the guy you always kind of want to fade in tournaments, especially if you know he's going to be, I don't know, 40% owned or something like that, 45% owned in GPPs, which I think on FanDuel, you could definitely see that being the case, maybe a little bit less, but I think that he's definitely the guy that you don't want to, that you really kind of, he's an easy fade. Let me put it that way. Now the rest of the New Orleans guys, I did write up Rondo last night. Rondo's been kind of butting up against triple doubles almost kind of every night now that the minutes have stabilized. And that has been the case. We were worried about his minutes earlier in the season because he was kind of just fluctuating all over the place. That has not really been the case in the short term. They have played him more consistently. He strikes me as a decent mid-tier value in that 6,000s range on FanDuel. Drew Holiday's getting a little expensive. And I guess the only other news we're waiting for, and we'll talk about the Clippers in a second. The only other news we're waiting for on the New Orleans side is Emeka Okafor. He sat out last game and Mirotić got the start. The game ended up being a blowout. My guess was the plan was to play him a lot of minutes, had the game stayed close, but it's hard to completely know. Okafor, my guess is if Okafor plays, he would start again simply to match up with DeAndre Jordan, because I don't think they want to go that route with Davis. I think they like Davis matching up against the power forward, especially with the first unit, because it's just better. He just gets caught less under the basket and whatever. Where do you fall on like the rest of these New Orleans guys as possible value plays for cash? And I guess I'll throw Etuan Moore into the mix a little bit, mostly because that small forward list was really bad and he's only 4,200.
Yeah, I think that your assessment for New Orleans sounds pretty solid to me. I mean, I think Rondo is a good play. I think, you know, he does so much across the board that he's going to have a higher floor even than a lot of point guards when the minutes are there. You know, the rebounds and the assists really buoy those underlying totals to where I think 5X should be an afterthought for him if the true minutes range is going to be something between 32 and 35. And actually, based on what you said about Mirotić, I was feeling a little concerned at first because it sounded like, you know, you were like, well, he's on track to play more minutes. And so I was hearing like projecting growth from the 30 minutes that he played last game. When I looked at the projections you'd come up with from last night, and by the way, in case anyone doesn't realize, every single night we go through every single player and project minutes for them based on all the available data. It's a painstaking process, but it's what makes the lineup optimizer so good. But yeah, so when I saw you had Mirotić at 31 minutes, I didn't feel concerned about that number at all. So I think if he's coming in at a 31-minute projection, that seems totally appropriate to me. I could see upside, like, you know, as I look through some of these other guys, it appears as though Rondo lost about 3 minutes in the blowout, where Davis maybe lost only one or two. If you think Mirotić could have been one of those guys who could play 3-4 extra minutes, then I think all of a sudden he's a great value. So yeah, there's just value up and down the lineup for the Pelicans for me. And on a night with so many bad matchups, so much wincing and concern, I would be happy to play as many of these guys as I can.
And then on the Clipper side, you're getting, I think, a decent amount of upside as well.
Sure,
I think
New Orleans is a bad defensive team, so let's go.
Oh, yeah. They're very bad. And Lou Williams, I think we're getting a good value on Lou Williams. I know he's 8,000. He's a little bit less on DraftKings at 7,700. That price has been, in some ways, kept down in the short term because he's been shooting pretty bad from the field. He's 3 for his last 21 from three over over the last four games. And this is a guy that, you know, scoring is his bread and butter, and he takes a ton of shots. It doesn't, when he's missing, it doesn't stop him from shooting, except for that Houston game, really. But he's really good. He's going to get close, push in a close game. He's going to push up to 20 shot attempts. And the assist numbers have been okay over the short term, especially as they've had him running some more point guard duties. He's averaged a little bit more than six assists over the last month plus. So I really, really like Lou Williams here. He fits the mold of upper middle tier guy, especially if we're not going to get a lot of cheaper value. We're going to need to roster a couple of these kind of guys. So I like him. And then I'm wondering your thoughts here on Teodosic. Now the Clippers screwed up because they failed to go. They couldn't renew contracts on both CJ Williams and Tyrone Wall. So they both had to send them both back to the G League. And now they're left with
great job, everybody.
Really only three guards. Tenarius Thornwell is on the roster, but they're really left with Rivers, Teodosic, and Williams. Teodosic is very cheap on a night where we really might need a guy like that. He's only 4,400 on FanDuel. I only have him at 29 minutes in a decent matchup. Could you see him as maybe just a quasi punt play if nothing else materializes at this price, or does he kind of just not do enough for you?
No, I think he does plenty on the price point. I mean, 4,400, he's playing 26 to 28 minutes a game. The concerning thing with Teodosic always is going to be just looks like a mugshot whenever you click on his FanDuel profile picture. That's like the thing that I always hate about playing Teodosic personally. Like, I'm just like, this is the guy I'm going to rally behind, you know? But I think outside of that, of the looks thing, I think we're feeling okay on Teodosic. I like Lou Will too. You mentioned him. I think there's, I hesitate to say nothing but upside on the $8,000 price point, but I think there's plenty of upside on the price point if the shot continues to fall. And with how bad New Orleans is at defending wing players, I think you could see significant growth there. Yeah, and outside of those guys, though, you know, like Tobias Harris, sure, he's like had some good games recently. I think he's the one guy among the Clippers who could get some run tonight, some high ownership from other DFS players, where I'm probably a little bit off it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I land too. I think this overall, this game will have the highest ownership of any game in the slate. So prepare to see those cash lines move as you get later into the night. By the way, someone mentioned this in the chat the other day. The timing of the game does not matter for like when you should roster a player. So I don't want people to confuse what I just said with that conflating that idea, because that idea doesn't make any sense. It does not matter when the game starts for when, you know, the cash line ends up finishing. I'm just saying that whatever it is going into this game, it is going to move, and you are going to want to have exposure to this game just because it is probably the juiciest one on the slate, probably by far, just by the nature of the way these two teams play with the rotations and some of the prices on the guys. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system, so go check that out. Free for 3 days and then $34.95 a month. Go over and check out the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/DFSR podcasts, and that's the live video feed of us doing that. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Wednesday slate, and then back again on Friday. Please rate and review us on iTunes, because that always helps. 5 stars helps us move up the iTunes charts and gets clicks and listens, which is really the way that we're able to continue podcasting. All right, buddy, back again tomorrow talking a full Wednesday of basketball. Enjoy this crappy slate of NBA that we got going tonight.
Can't wait.